The implications of the Midwest drought and their impacts on Texas agriculture heading into the 2013 crop season are the focus of two interviews with Dr. Mark Welch and Dr. John Robinson, Texas A&M AgriLife Extension economist from College Station. Okay, Mark, bring us up to speed on the current corn situation in the Midwest and how that's impacting the current markets.
We're still trying to get a handle on exactly what the supply is going to be of corn in this 2012 crop. Of course, early indications are we're going to come in some 2 billion bushels below last year's crop. We're seeing crop condition estimates from USDA starting to stabilize now. So perhaps most of the yield damage is done and accounted for. As, of course, as the crop is maturing, you'd expect it would be leveling off. And we are doing that at levels that would be comparable to the drought of 1988. And that's kind of been our benchmark all through the summer, if the crop was going to be about that bad or not. And it looks like that's about where we're going to come in. The latest field surveys of some of the private organizations have come up with a national average yield of about 120 bushels per acre, which is 3.5 bushels below where USDA came in August. USDA will update their numbers in September. And so we look like we're about on track for 120 bushels per acre and a national crop, total corn production, about 10.5 billion bushels. The question is then from that point, once we kind of get the supply situation kind of settled, is have we cut back enough on usage given those kind of anticipated supplies going forward in the marketing year? And so it's moved to the rest of 2012 and in 2013. We've cut back on ethanol use. We're seeing reductions in the livestock sector on grain for feed use. We're pulling back in the export markets. And so it looks like that if we've made those use reductions, that would be in accordance with a crop with about a 10.5 billion bushel crop. And so the surprise will then come if either the supplies are tighter than that, or perhaps they're one of those demand categories that will make significant revisions in their use numbers. But given the high prices that we're seeing, we're kind of probably about where we ought to be given the current situation.
Okay, now let's talk about implications for food prices and overall demand for grain, specifically corn, for main staple for many food products.
And there certainly will be some influence as we're seeing these high grain prices that are going to, over time, move their way through the food supply chain. But we need to remember, these as dramatic as this price run-up has been, this rally is only a couple of months old. We really started this escalation of prices in the middle of June. So it will take some time for all this to pass through the food chain, even to the degree that it affects final consumer food prices. You know, wheat is probably the most direct example that I can point to. Yes, we've seen a rapid run-up in wheat prices, but still with the value of wheat that's in a loaf of bread only accounts for less than 10% of the value of that wheat loaf of bread comes from the price of wheat that's in that bread. So there's so many other factors that contribute to the final cost of the product to the consumer. And one of the particular components of that are important to watch is the energy component. Crude oil prices, we're seeing some rally now with gasoline prices going up and crude oil prices making some rally given the storm in the Gulf and some other factors that are going on, some refinery problems. But generally speaking, energy prices have been relatively moderate this summer. And so given that, many food manufacturers and other parts of the system are able to absorb higher grain prices because many of their other costs, particularly those related to the energy markets, have been relatively stable. And so that gives us a component that, for instance, if we compare to what happened in 2008, we saw food prices escalating rapidly, grain prices were higher, but remember that crude oil was also running to all-time record highs at that time, too. Well, we're lacking that piece this time, which has created a much more stable environment. Really, the critical factor as we move, we get the corn harvest kind of stabilized, and we move through the winter months here in the United States, will be the response of trading partners around the world? Will governments be stepping in to impact or impose policy limitations on the free movement of some of these commodities, whether it particularly in the grain markets? As long as the markets stay open and keep working, we'll be able to handle this situation, I think, as we move forward. Even with some concerns in the wheat market now, with at the Black Sea region, they've had some drought situation concerns also this summer, what their spring wheat harvest is going to be. But as long as we keep the free flow of grain moving, I think we'll be able to adequately adjust to the supply situation, to those use categories. It'll be distributed adequately. But again, this is a relatively short-term situation. It'll have some repercussions down the road. But I think we need to limit that in terms of just how long we've been enduring this. And then the more direct impact is going to come to the livestock sector. They've been suffering higher feed costs. It will take, again, some time for those higher feed costs to adjust to the production systems in the livestock sectors. We're seeing fewer broiler chicks placed on feed throughout 2012, particularly in the last several weeks. We're seeing sow slaughter is above the five-year average, above last year, so we're seeing some adjustment in the hog industry. The livestock industry, we've got more cattle on feed, but how much of that is attributed just to the drought situation throughout the Midwest? And, of course, cattle are particularly adept at utilizing other feed sources, particularly forages. So corn that was cut for silage, for instance, or even baled, can find its way to supplement some of the increased numbers of cattle that are in feedlots because of the drought situation. But over time, if these high prices, limiting profit potential in the livestock sector, limit the growth of that livestock industry, again, long-term implications for feed use being lower in the future, given fewer livestock numbers, but also putting upward pressure on prices in the meat case because of the livestock response to these high prices. But again, those are factors down the road in response to what's happening in grain today.
Okay, and then moving over to cotton. John, do you think we'll see a shift in cotton acreage here in Texas? Maybe some farmers switching to corn to capitalize on the demand for corn?
Yes. I'm pretty much expecting that. I think everybody is. Certainly in other parts of the U.S., when soybean and corn prices and wheat prices that are for wheat that's grown in that region, all of that is expected probably to take, you know, mid-south and southeastern cotton acreage down to the low levels that we saw in about 08 and 09. And Texas tends to not usually see those kinds of acreage reductions, but every once in a while we do. The last time Texas had a major year-on-year acreage reduction was it was over a 20% reduction, and it was between 06 and 07, and it was exactly the same situation of relatively higher grain prices. And so we're seeing that now. Even though we don't grow a lot of soybeans and we're limited on how much corn we can produce relative to other parts of the country, wheat prices, you know, I hear stories of high grain sorghum prices that are probably, I would expect, tempt a lot of growers to put sorghum back into the rotation. So I think a lot of dryland acreage may compete with wheat and grain sorghum and maybe even some irrigated. So I wouldn't be surprised to see about a 20% reduction and see our acreage drop down to maybe around the five point something million acres, which is pretty substantial year-on-year decline.
Okay. And Mark, going back to you, as far as planted corn acreage here in Texas, what numbers are we looking at right now, and what type of an adjustment could we see going into 2013?
We're planting around 2 million acres of corn and about the equivalent number of grain sorghum acres. Don't see a huge expansion in grain in that we kind of plant those acres where they fit right now. And many farmers have responded about as best they can at this point because, as John mentioned, there's not – Texas is not the best environment in the world for growing corn. And we're seeing, of course, some water restrictions, particularly in the Ogallala Aquifer, as the pumping capacity of many of those irrigated systems is kind of at their limit. And so as farmers are squeezing all the efficiency that they can, again, it doesn't provide a lot of opportunity for growth. We're trying to hang on to those acres and keep them productive, but probably not an expansion given the limitations of that aquifer up in the high plains. There is some possibility for some, you know, dry land shift, particularly in grain sorghum, perhaps competing with cotton and with wheat. Again, that's limited. Grain sorghum in many parts of the high plains is the secondary crop that you'd plant if you fail your cotton crop. And those farmers, many of them are cotton farmers, and they'll stick with that production system. So it, I don't see a big shift there. Wheat is kind of another question. If we get some rain this fall, we could see a lot of acres get planted, and I expect we will. An average number for Texas would be about 6 million acres, but that's about what we plant anyway. Whether prices are high or low, the question is whether it gets an adequate growth in the fall, can be used for a forage crop, and then you can make your final decision in the spring whether to take it to grain, leave it for forage. You can terminate the crop and go to cotton. So there's a lot of flexibility with wheat. So if we do get some rainfall this fall, I think we'll see a significant increase in wheat acres in Texas, and I think we'll see an increase nationwide. I think we'll see a couple of million acres of wheat in the U.S. get planted this fall, again, with the high prices that we have now. But I do expect higher corn acres nationwide next year. Soybean acres should be strong, and I think we'll see a strong acreage response to the price situation that we have. We're finishing up 2012. And, of course, then given the weather next year will depend on the production response from all that. But we're certainly setting ourselves up for a very large grain crop in 2013 in the face of users of grains that are squeezing, again, every bit of efficiency they can out of every bushel they buy. So we could certainly be looking at a pullback on the use side and a strong increase on the production side given normal weather in 2013.
Okay, John, on the cotton side, price-wise, what are we looking at? Think prices will stay level where they are, or do you think we might see some upside maybe towards the end of the year?
Well, prices have been the last really big adjustment happened back in May when we got some rather bearish supply and demand numbers, and prices after that kind of got into a sideways channel from just under 70 cents to as high recently here as 77 cents. I'm kind of expecting a continuation of sort of a range-bound sideways sort of pattern bouncing around with some of this outside news that we hear from time to time in outside markets in Europe and financial things. But I'm expecting from now to the end of the year probably to see prices trade anywhere from 80 down to below 70, depending on kind of what the news is. We're watching the crop forecast. Mark mentioned it for corn. For cotton, USDA kind of surprised everybody in counting, I think, more cotton bolls out there than I think are really out there. I think the crop estimate in September and then in October and November is probably going to get a little smaller. But I don't think that's really going to be a big boost for prices because I think everybody expects that it should get a little bit smaller. So it's really a question of just zeroing in on a number that's believable and, you know, whatever turns out. But the uncertainty premium is going to go out of this market sometime in the latter fall. And I think that's going to take any potential price rally effect away from the fact that they're reducing the actual crop estimate. Like I said, I don't think there's a lot of rationale for a big fundamental explosion in prices because of what happens to the U.S. harvest. Now, what might be a surprise is if the Indian harvest, where, you know, they had a substandard monsoon rains, the rains have gotten better here lately, and they harvest cotton from all the way into February, hand harvesting. Well, that's a long time to discover how much or how little cotton they have over there. And if they come up millions of bales short, then that might be kind of a market shock that might generate a price rally that we don't see right now, but might get fuel to the fire.
Okay, and now marketing strategies. What are you advising producers out there as far as marketing cotton and some strategies they can take advantage of?
That's kind of a tough one because we've been in such a downward adjustment through the spring. It's very tempting to kind of just say, well, I told you so. You really should have done something back in about March when we had, you know, 90 and 80 cent prices on the futures market. And when if there were contracts out there, I didn't hear of that many people taking advantage of them because I think the terms of those contracts were pretty tough, pretty wide basis being offered. But it was possible using the futures market, using options back in the spring to have taken spent about 5 cents and that position would now be paying for some of that decline in prices, buffering that decline in prices. Now, I don't know that there's really that much in the options world that one can do or that would be worth it. Like I say, I think we're going to be trading in a range, so there might be a surprise maybe to the upside. I don't think we're going to decline too much below 70. So I think people are now in the position of trying to get the best, you know, cash offer they can once they get something harvested. And if you're shopping around for call options or something to capture any unforeseen price rallies, you know, people can always be shopping for those. So I would be looking for that kind of a strategy to, you know, get the best cash deal I could and at least shopping for options on December or March futures. And then thinking ahead to next year, kind of thinking the same way. It's almost September now and you think, well, there's a lot of time value and options are really expensive, but the volatility on December 13 futures is so low that sometimes you can buy options on December 13 way in advance. And so it's worth shopping. It's worth people thinking about what's affordable and what's likely in terms of price direction, that sort of thing.
Okay, and Mark, on your side of things, earlier in the year, I guess with some corn options, you could have captured some of that top of that market there. I believe you in one of your market newsletters said you had sold some and at pretty much the top of the market at the time. What are some of the strategies you're advising?
As we've, of course, watched the grain markets just explode the last several weeks, it's one of those situations that the market is driven just by the next weekly forecast. And the first rain that might have come through the summer, of course, could have turned the whole thing around at any time. And, of course, the rains never came. And so the prices have just gone up and up and up. My particular philosophy is one that would break down sales through the year and sell into a rally. I think that's psychologically much easier to do rather than after we've hit a peak, selling as prices go down. Because many times we find ourselves saying that, well, we've missed that peak, but if market comes back up to a certain level, well, I'll make those sales then. Well, the problem is once a market turns, many times we don't see those chances come around for a second time. And so I'm much more comfortable selling into a rally, recognizing that, yes, many of those sales were made too early. But as the market continues to go up, it's just increasing my average price the longer it will do that. Are we at a top in the market now? I don't know. But given the fact that if our supply situation is stabilizing and we continue to receive indications that the on the use categories that we've adjusted appropriately, probably so. We've probably done about all we need to do right now. We'll see, of course, South American plantings in response to these high prices and some other factors in that in the speculative markets, whether money is pulled in or out of that particular category, whether we sustain where we are. As we look particularly at the wheat market, I think that's our first marketing decision we're facing right now in that we've got relatively high prices right here at planting time. So what should a producer look at doing? One of the first factors they might want to consider is their crop insurance choice. If you can afford to buy up the level of coverage in your revenue protection crop insurance program, that might be one of the best marketing strategies you can do with a relatively high projected insurance price. So look at if you've been buying 65% coverage, can you buy 75%? Will there be even a higher price election possible in Texas for 2013? So, you know, talk to your crop insurance people And that might be the first step in your marketing plan for wheat for next year in trying to capture this particular level of prices that we've seen. And then that same we'll consider for grains as we go through the winter, as we look at the possibilities of doing something to put a floor price in that 2013 crop. I think we need to pay strong attention to that. If the supply situation is indicating that we're going to turn this thing around, either acreage and productivity-wise, in the face of contracting demand, we certainly need to do something to lock in some very profitable prices that we're going to be looking at this fall.
Okay, anything else y'all want to add? John, do you have any other comments?
Well, following up on that revenue insurance comment, the same thing would apply in about really December, January, depending on what part of the state you're in, December, January, and February. The kind of implicit pricing opportunity that's offered by revenue protection crop insurance policies, it all depends on where the futures market, specifically where the December 13 futures contract is trading, and what the average settlement prices are in a particular window that corresponds to your area. But that's something that we'll certainly be talking about, and that people should be paying attention to, because very early in the year, there's not that many pricing opportunities way out or risk management opportunities, but the revenue insurance is generally one of the first ones. I'd mentioned, you know, options even earlier than that, but the revenue insurance one is certainly one that people need to be paying attention to and talking about with their agent and evaluating, you know, whether they can make a higher coverage level more affordable by going to like enterprise units or something like that. So those are things I think people need to be visiting about with their agents.
Okay. Mark, do you have anything else you wanted to add?
I just think it's important as we, of course, we talk a lot about marketing plans and marketing strategies for a producer to consider the criteria that they use for making a marketing decision. Many times it becomes an emotional decision. But as we consider where prices are, what are the criteria by which you recognize a price as a good price that you'd like to take advantage of, or you think you ought to wait? Of course, a couple of those factors are you covering your cost? Are you covering your cost with a certain percentage of a profit margin? Where are you within the range of historical prices? Are you selling in the top third of the market, top 20%, top 10%? If we evaluate those kind of criteria in the grain markets today versus your cost of production, I think we're certainly covering our cost with a nice profit margin built in. We are trading in some of the top ranges of prices, of course, all-time record highs in corn, and certainly in the higher range even for wheat. So we've got some pretty strong criteria by which it would make sense to start locking in some prices on at least portions of production as we move forward, wrapping up 2012 and looking ahead to 2013.
Reporting from College Station, Texas, I'm Blair Fannin with Texas A&M AgriLife Communications.